What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends, Larry Rifkin and John Krofcik. And John, we do get into issues that deal with politics, social policy, even medical advances, technological. We're always looking at where America is headed, what is emerging that is going to affect our society. And I think we're all aware of these blazing headlines recently about Purdue Pharma being sued, filing for bankruptcy, and a big settlement against Johnson & Johnson in Oklahoma regarding opioids. So clearly, we are on the alert about the impacts of opioids.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, they're bad. Let's face it. They're very addictive. But now you got the vaping thing where we're going to ban vaping and, you know,
well, we've done a couple of podcasts about this. Yeah. I refer you back to them because there is quite a raging debate. And I remember a public health person from, I think it was Boston University many years ago on my radio program, saying that he thought vaping would be a tremendous advance.
Well, here's what I don't understand, Larry, and maybe you can answer this question. More people die from cigarettes. Why aren't we banning cigarettes?
Ah. Well, I think, unfortunately, the propaganda wars won out in the early days. And because we have so many people of a certain generation who still are smokers, that would cause a real uproar. So instead of banning it, John, what we do is we tax them into oblivion and we use them to get monies for other health campaigns, presumably.
All right. Well, I knew you had an answer for that. But anyhow,
that's
to this subject we're on.
But let's not forget that opioids started out, John, as a presumed good thing, as did vaping,
right,
to help alleviate pain. And, hey, your doctor said it was okay. In fact, they prescribed it, so we all went along, right?
And we went to that zero pain.
Exactly. Well, back in the 90s and early 00s, and I think I've said this in another podcast opening, I did a show with a Dr. Dillard from a New York University who was very well established. And at that time, we did it for PBS, and pain was the big issue. Right. How do we help people avoid pain? And I guess we just went to extremes, as we often do in America. Whenever we see something, we rush right to the fringes, right to the edges,
well,
and
then
we take
you got
it all
big
the way.
Pharma who's eager to please. So, and, you know, they got stuff through that probably shouldn't have been through because of how addictive it is. And here we are today.
Well, had all the testing been done?
Right.
Perhaps
you wonder.
Not. Well, what we didn't see coming was the combination of these legal opioids and heroin. And we also didn't see the greed epidemic in all facets of American life intersecting with legitimate medicine.
That's the part that really...
Perhaps we should have seen both. So, this brings us to the topic today. As states have put limits on opioid prescriptions and our awareness about their possible dangers have become so loud, people look for another way to deal with pain. And in the 90s, of course, it was the opioids. Today, what's the approach that we're looking at?
Well, it's the street drugs. Let's face it. I mean, they've stepped up to the game there.
But when you say street drugs, I mean, think about it, John. I see on every corner now about CBD supplement products.
Oh, yes. You're absolutely right.
Too. Right?
Yes.
Now,
yes.
I don't know exactly. I know they're hemp derived. So what do they do? Are their benefits real? What are the downsides? And then, of course, we have medical marijuana. Now, in our state, it's legal, and we think that's a great thing. We've heard from many people. But the problem is the FDA doesn't acknowledge it, and so we don't have the rigorous testing that goes on when it's at the federal level. We do have state health departments, but are they really equipped one by one to do the job?
Yeah, and you wonder what quality of stuff you're getting, and is it really doing what it should be doing?
Exactly. I was shocked, John, to read that a majority of those arthritis patients in this country say that they have tried either medical marijuana or this cannabis oil, CBD, for medical purposes. Wow. A majority of arthritis patients, and you think of them in many cases, of course, there's juvenile arthritis, right, but many as being older Americans.
Wow. See, I never heard stats like that.
Yeah.
Now, is it working for them?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, do we really know? Has there been enough testing before the fact, after the fact? And without these federal controls,
right,
what are we really looking at here?
And then ultimately, what's the side effects of these things?
Well, are we going to later find out, as we are finding out now, some of the downsides and the unintended consequences of opioids and of vaping,
yeah,
that this is going to go into that category as well? Well, we're not the only ones worried about that. Seth Ginsberg is the co-founder of Global Healthy Living Foundation. And I'm not going to say he's against these products, but he's asking us to be very mindful and very cautious. And that's what this podcast is all about. You ready for it?
I'm ready.
All right. Only on America Trends.
With us on the line on America Trends is Seth Ginsberg. He's the co-founder of Global Healthy Living Foundation. Just explain, Seth, what the organization is about.
So, hi, Larry. The Global Healthy Living Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit organization based in New York with the mission to improve the quality of life for people with chronic illnesses. We, GHLF, advocates for improved access to care at the community level, amplifying education and awareness efforts within our social media framework. We are also, GHLF is the parent nonprofit of Creaky Joints, which is the 20-year-old online patient community for people with all forms of arthritis.
And when we talk about chronic diseases, somebody listening might say, I'm not certain exactly what that is. Some people have said even today, cancer can be seen in certain of its forms as a chronic disease. What is a chronic disease?
And fortunately, I believe cancer today, many forms of it, is a chronic disease. So a chronic disease is a condition that you have forever and that you live with and manage. And common types of chronic diseases that you might have heard include arthritis, of course, diabetes, for example, migraine, and other cardiometabolic conditions, hypertension, for example, high cholesterol, things like that. So to us, with GHLF, our focus first and foremost are on chronic inflammatory diseases, and these are conditions that are inflammatory and include a form of arthritis called rheumatoid arthritis, inflammatory form of arthritis, as well as a skin condition called psoriasis, which is inflammation of the skin, and then inflammation of the gut, or IBD, inflammatory bowel disease, or Crohn's disease, rounds out the trifecta of common chronic inflammatory diseases. And then we have focus areas elsewhere as well, including migraine and neurological issues, and then focus on vaccination, awareness, and education.
Okay, so a lot of things that many of the people probably listening to this podcast know either directly or through someone that they love. And of course, a lot of these conditions require, well, maintenance, and a lot of it relates to pain, and a lot of it relates to just controlling the numbers and making certain that everything's in line. Pain has got to be one of the big areas, I would imagine. And of course, a lot of chronic diseases we have talked about, I think, in the past, well, acute and chronic, needing opioids. And of course, opioids have kind of gotten a bad name in this recent period. So I know people are looking for alternatives. And of course, you have just written about the fact that many doctors and patients are flying blind as it relates to one of those alternatives, which is medical marijuana. Tell us about how much involved you've gotten in this issue of medical marijuana.
The extent of our involvement right now has been from a research as well as a policy and regulatory standpoint. That's really all we can do. Initially, latest project that concerns marijuana for medical use, as well as CBD, and research into the patient experiences and perspectives with MMU, marijuana for medical use, and CBD. And then several other questions as we probed into people's thoughts and feelings about it as it relates to their personal situation, their health condition, their relationship with their doctor, and so forth. By all accounts, the study that we recently conducted and presented the results at a global medical meeting show us that we have to do a lot more research, an awful lot more research, and we have to start studying marijuana for medical use as well as CBD for medical conditions in the same way we study any other treatment for chronic diseases. And that's through randomized clinical trials, RCTs, and with controlled protocols that can establish evidence for the literature and, of course, to guide doctors and other healthcare professionals' understanding of how to use it and the impact that it has.
Difficulty would seem to be that you still have a federal classification of cannabis as a Schedule I drug. How much does that impede the ability to really have these studies other than those that might be done by more private interests, shall we say?
Well, that's exactly where I was going. And while, you know, stating the obvious that we need more research is important to say out loud, to your point exactly, there is a climate today, a regulatory climate specifically, that prohibits any meaningful or substantial research. And it's one of those funny things about America right now, that we, you know, can excel at so many things, and then we can be literally in the dark ages with others. And I think one of the things I took away from the research that we just conducted was that given the state's experimentation with legalization and, you know, allowing for its use for medical or other, and such a substantial population that now has access to it, we were able to measure with some scientific accuracy the fact that over half of arthritis patients, at least those in our community, have tried either medical marijuana or CBD for medical reasons. And of those who use marijuana regularly, 62% use it every day. Hmm. So what this tells us is that patients are medicating, they're self-medicating with products that we know very little about scientifically, and especially medically. That speaks nothing of, you know, its safety and its purity and all of those other consumer protective elements that need to be considered. You know, at the end of the day, the alarm we're sounding to the doctor as well as patient community is that, you know, we have to all get on the same page that, like, this is reality. And we can't just turn a blind eye to it. We have to understand that this is a serious discussion that begs some serious research so that we can be as informed as possible and make even better decisions when it comes to using this as a therapy, if appropriate.
If somebody is listening in one of the 33 states that has legalized medical marijuana for various conditions, and I know in the state in which I live, they continue to expand that list of ailments that they allow medical marijuana to be used, what kind of safeguards are in place? Because there is definitely a state sanction. And I know that they are looking in very carefully at the production and distribution.
So there are, to a large degree, safeguards that were written into the state policies that legalize marijuana, especially for medical use. Many might contend that they're quite onerous, but they're there, you know, obviously for the public's protection. But what's happening here is states are assuming the role that a regulatory body like the Food and Drug Administration at the federal level, the FDA, which is pretty good, if not the best, at doing this. I'd ask for suggestion for a better regulatory body in this world. Mm-hmm. And I say this, you know, with a smile, knowing that every other regulatory body basically looks at the FDA and modeled after that. But, you know, the folks up in Albany or the folks in, you know, your state's capital don't necessarily have that type of rigor, nor the responsibility to serve, you know, as the protectors of consumers who are medicating. So therefore, you know, we still have a long way to go. But to answer your question or to address your main point, I think that people can take some comfort in knowing that most, and I think, you know, of course, depends on your state and very specifically the law in that state. But most states that I'm aware of that legalized have created a kind of seed to sale continuum from, you know, the growth of the plant to the dispensing of it at a dispensary in a extremely closed loop that is highly regulated and accounts for the surveillance needed to ensure quality and things like that for the sake of public protection. But, you know, again, now we're talking about 32 different states with 32 different rules, and there are concerns in the health advocacy community around things like mold and fungus and other additives that can, you know, escape a state-based regulatory body, which might not have, you know, all that it needs to understand these components. And these things could lead to real problems in the future. And we're at a tipping point, clearly, where America needs to think about at a federal level how to make this work correctly and properly so that we can be the leaders, as I think we deserve to be as a country, in the research and the technology and then the implementation of marijuana, both for medical use as well as recreational use.
So federally, because of the limitations and the way this drug is considered to be still class one, the FDA can do nothing as it relates to this because it's illegal. They don't recognize it. Or can they do anything, or do they do anything as it relates to looking at quality and the potency of a product? No?
So they're making their best effort. And to the, again, to their credit, and you could tell I'm a fanboy of the FDA, they've engaged in a series of public comment periods, and they are actively engaging the public on this subject. I think understanding that this is the inevitable future. The latest meeting was, I believe, July 16th. And the FDA asked the public to share scientific literature and any other data, as well as public comments, to help regulators there decide appropriate CBD dosing levels, specifically around CBD, drug interactions, impacts to special populations like children, the elderly, and pregnant or lactating women, and then risks of long-term exposure. This was a very popular meeting. The May 31st hearing that preceded it, over 100 industry manufacturers and activists provided something like close to 4,000 written comments to the agency, which they read and they review. But right now, all the best we can tell from the folks in Maryland, which is where FDA is based, is that they vowed to expedite their review of cannabis-derived compounds because of the surge in CBD products that have literally overnight become ubiquitous in our consumer market. I mean, literally, you can get CBD in a pill, in a tincture. I saw here in Brooklyn in New York a CBD shave oil for your face. And, you know, it made me smile, but it also, you know, panicked me a little bit that things have gotten that out of hand without any proper scientific evidence.
Well, let's talk about this, because this is becoming a huge business. We know that. I mean, there are entrepreneurs everywhere. There's all kinds of investment going on. But there might be a lot of confusion, because in certain states, we're talking about both medical and recreational marijuana. And just to step back for a moment, how much are those two going on a parallel course in most states, or is there a collision here? Maybe this would be a good time, Seth Ginsberg, for you to describe to us the difference between medical marijuana and recreational marijuana.
So the short answer is money. Taxes. The tax rate of medical marijuana is dramatically lower than that of recreational marijuana. I think that if we looked at the historical trend of the state legalization processes, beginning with California and Colorado in the early years, and through to states like Illinois and Massachusetts now, the tip of the spear has always been the medical use. These were the initial laws that were passed for, you know, the sake of, you know, addressing like real dire unmet needs in very specific, very serious patient populations that really, you know, can't wait, can't afford to wait, and demanded that change. And then I think as the additional political forces came to bear, as well as the monetary upside and taxation benefits and things like that, and industry input, we saw a trend of recreational legalization. They are parallel. They are different. They are very specifically written in terms of what's permissible, how companies need to operate within that framework. Clearly, the medical has an additional layer of provider or healthcare recommendation in some cases, because they can't call it a prescription, but it's a recommendation by a licensed medical professional that has, you know, gone through the hoops needed at that state level to be a, you know, a certified, a doctor who can write those recommendations. There's a cost to the patient in many of the medical marijuana frameworks that require, again, you know, permitting, application fees, things like that. But on the flip side, the cost of goods, the product itself, generally, and this does vary too by state, but generally it's a lot lower for medical than it is for recreational.
Talk about CBD as being the key component for the medical marijuana. A lot of people will think of THC, which gets people high, I mean, in the recreational side of this. But how different are they as a product? I think somebody listening who might want to start using it, maybe it's just come online, or maybe the ailment that they have has just been included in the medical marijuana designation within their state. I mean, what does it do for the patient? I mean, let's, you know, everybody has this vision of marijuana, weed, pot, what have you. And how does it help?
So THC is psychoactive and is what gets you and makes you feel high. CBD doesn't. And CBD has its properties exist at the molecular level. And many people lay claim to all of its different mechanisms of action and how it addresses ailments like, you know, inflammation, things like that physically. If you were to just take the highest level, most general, that was not an intended pun, by the way, but if you go to 30,000 feet and kind of look at the two, THC, you feel in your head, you know, and that can affect your, you know, the feeling of, you know, the difference in going from sober to not and being high, quote unquote. And then CBD doesn't have the psychoactive.
Those properties. But some people might use it, let's say, in the way others use medical. Let me ask you about some of the things that it does help with. And I know the research has been difficult because of what we've been talking about throughout the course of this podcast. Does it reduce anxiety? Does it really help with inflammation, particularly with these chronic joint diseases? Does it help with nausea? I mean, we hear all of these things. What have you seen?
Well, you know, like, you're making my point. The world could make these claims, but without the evidence, and I mean proper evidence, that is gathered in a proper and scientifically approved manner, we do not know. And, you know, I'm a big fan. If I had a tattoo on my body, it might read caveat emptor, buyer beware. And the more outlandish the claims are by those making the sale, the more one should be suspect. And unfortunately, and here's kind of the problem we have, people want and need help. They want and need relief from all of these issues, from insomnia to anxiety to pain to everything in between. And so when one goes into a proposition like taking a medication or a supplement or anything for that matter, with a strong enough desire for it to work, we've already blurred the lines of whether or not, you know, their response to it is scientifically credible. That's, again, why we do randomized clinical trials where there's a blinded group taking a placebo and they don't know what they're taking. Like, they don't know if it's the medicine or the placebo, the pretend medicine, the sugar pill. And so, I don't want to comment on what CBD or marijuana for medical use can address clinically, because that's ultimately my point, that we need further and much more rigorous research to demonstrate all of the positive as well as negative effects that these things have and are associated with.
Understood. But the question that I have is, if in fact this is now being looked upon by many as a better alternative than opioids, and we've seen the scourge of opioids in our society, and there are lots of people saying, I found the alternative, it's medical marijuana, and yet we have so much uncertainty about the quality and the sourcing and such. So what do you say as you look at these perhaps two alternatives that have their own issues related to their use?
I think that's a good point. And clearly we have an epidemic, and opioids have run amok in our society. And at the same time, many opioids are taken for a very valid reason in the beginning, and that is to treat and manage pain, acute or chronic. And so alternatives to those highly addictive substances that obviously have proven, you know, to be quite devastating in many communities, are ones that we need to look very closely and very carefully at. And I'm sure that enters into the conversation in arenas like FDA, as well as in Congress, and of course in state houses around the country, because recognizing that alternatives are eagerly sought by the patient population, the public, and then, you know, using this as one of those opportunities or a vector out of, an opioid is I think a very, very good conversation to have and a very important one to have, and one that, I would never dismiss, and just the opposite. We would support having a much more rigorous discussion about it.
And what kind of delicate position are physicians in as it relates to this? Because I never go to a physician who doesn't say, well, I've looked at the body of research about this particular drug, and let me tell you this, that, or the other. But because of the lack of research and clinical trials, doctors must be in a very precarious position when patients come to them these days and say, hey, it's legal here, or it just became legal, should I look into this? What do they say, and where do they generally stand in terms of moving medical marijuana along to the other states and federally?
So I think most physicians, if you just took a doctor off the street, primary care doctor, or even a specialist, and you said, hey, doc, what do you think about marijuana for medical use or CBD? If you asked 100 doctors that, 99 of them are going to say, it's interesting, but there just is no evidence and there's no published data. So I would hesitate, if not I do not, make a recommendation and, wouldn't counsel a patient to use it. Now, that's kind of the academic answer you're going to get, and we see that all the time. And I'm by and large, I think that's the right answer. That's what I would say if I were a doctor. It's like, look, I don't have anything to tell you for better or worse, so you have to know that. Whereas I think that, you know, there's another segment of doctors, and there's probably a large segment of doctors who, a lot like my doctor a long time ago once told me, that Seth, if you come into my office and tell me that putting a tablespoon of peanut butter on your knees made your knee feel better, I'd tell you to go buy a case of peanut butter. And so, you know, I think that there's a proper balance there that has to incorporate nuance, that has to incorporate a much larger picture. There are certain risk factors, mental health issues, cardiovascular issues, lung, you know, and breathing issues that are all, I think, part of the equation. And that's why, you know, people at a minimum need to communicate with their doctor that they're using it or considering using it, so that they can together weigh what the potential risks are if they have them. And you know, just go back to the study you mentioned before, we found that close to a third of patients who do medicate with marijuana for medical use or CBD, a third of those folks don't tell their doctor. And that's another red flag. And you shouldn't be self-medicating without communicating to your doctor what you're doing. Full stop, like with anything. Supplements, vitamins, over-the-counter medicines especially. People very often forget or neglect to tell their doctor that they've been taking 6 or 8 Advil a day for the last 2 weeks for, you know, their sprained back. And by the way, like, that's a massive, massive risk for, you know, complications with your stomach and an ulcer and things like that, that, you know, just not even thinking to tell your doctor.
Oh, yeah. And now doctors have been recommending, of course, to many about baby aspirin, and now they're reconsidering that as well. Are there many side effects that have been reported by medical marijuana?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I think that people report side effects of marijuana and CBD as they would virtually any other drug or supplement. And we have, I'll just keep coming back to this because it really is my main point. We have got to standardize and federalize the process to study this so that we can collect what's called adverse events, AE, and then serious adverse events, SAE. And there is, believe me, a very structured way of recording those and documenting those and quantifying those and then publishing those and disclosing those side effects or AEs or SAEs for regulated drugs on the market that, you know, deserve to be applied to marijuana for medical use and CBD. And by not doing that, again, I think we're doing our society a proper disservice. And there's no way for me to give you, you know, a straight up answer to that very important question because the data doesn't exist.
There are many red and blue states that have legalized medical marijuana. Is this another one of those issues caught up in the turmoil that we now have in Washington? Is this being politicized, or do you think that this is going to move along regardless of what kind of administration oversees the FDA? So if you were to look a year or two down the road, regardless of what happens with the election in 2020, is this on an inexorable course toward more of what you're hoping for, which is regulation and some uniformity across the country?
I'd like to think so, but I can tell you that what's lacking is additional advocacy. There's decent advocacy. Clearly, it's gotten us this far, and this is like light years ahead of where we were 10, 20 years ago. But we still need to reach a tipping point in, you know, like a critical mass awareness and activation of populations. And I mean populations like seniors or parents of sick kids, or, you know, you just start bucketing them and you suddenly reach 100 million people that need to be informed and then be mobilized and then be activated to engage with their elected officials and by extension their regulatory authorities to demand you know, the policies and regulations that we deserve. So it's a long way of saying it's not a red state, blue state issue. It's definitely not a Republican or Democrat, you know, discussion. It's a very interesting bipartisan discussion that is something that will, you know, inevitably, like what we're seeing, is demonstrate the ineptitude of our federal government. But one needs to appreciate the complexities and the nuances and the fact that there's a lot more involved in just saying, yeah, let's legalize it. And that's, I'm not making an excuse, and I'm certainly not defending Congress for its lack of movement here. But I will say that it gets complicated quickly when you go inside the Beltway.
Seth Ginsberg, co-founder of Global Healthy Living Foundation. And the study is called Patients' Perceptions and Use of Medical Marijuana. If somebody wants to get a copy of that, wants to go online, learn more about what you're working toward, how can they do that, Seth?
Yeah, cool. So the easiest way is to go to our website, creakyjoints.org, and that's creakyjoints.org. And right there on the homepage, we have our study information that's loaded up and very, very publicly available.
Okay, great. And there's no double entendre in creaky joints, but I just had to put that in. Listen, it was a pleasure talking to you today, Seth. Very interesting topic, and one that certainly is important to so many people in America and of growing relevance to so much about our medical situation in this country. Thank you again for being part of America Trends.
Absolutely. And I do appreciate the attention to this important subject, and I wish all of your listeners all the best, good health, and, you know, for a prosperous tomorrow.
America Trends Podcast is part of the MHNR Network, MHNRnetwork.com.